Welcome back to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone, and it is a pleasure to be with you once again, the rogue host of Coast to Coast AM. And I'm really excited about tonight's show. Got a great one lined up for you. In the first hour, we were talking to Dr. Michael Sala about an anomaly that was videotaped from the International Space Station on January 29th, 2014. Now, people who have listened to this show know that we talk about these sort of anomalies quite a bit. In fact, we are the pioneers of research into extraterrestrial life and the evidence for it, whether it be evidence from military sources or ancient petroglyphs on the side of a mountain somewhere. But in all of my research, and I've been doing this for more than 15 years around the world, the best evidence that has come forward for UFOs and aliens and anomalous craft that can only be ascribed to some sort of extraterrestrial phenomena has come from NASA, their own cameras, and the military itself. And this is another example. And this one is going really to raise some eyebrows because it is a live feed of the International Space Station. And you see this, well, there's no other way to put it, this what looks like a craft that's docked to it. Well, that's going to be in the first hour. And then in the second hour, Josh Reeves joins us. We're going to talk about the lost secrets of ancient America. And what we're going to get into, I think, is really interesting. It paints a different picture of the history of the North American soil from way back, beyond what is in the history books, beyond what is taught in university. And again, we are coming upon a sort of alternative history. And this is something that is emerging, again, as a discipline, as archaeology reveals the truths. And sometimes archaeology doesn't like the kind of truths they reveal because it upsets the whole timeline. And it's sort of built in a way that likes to keep all the ducks in a row. And when one little duck comes along and knocks them all off, well, that duck sometimes gets disappeared. But Josh is someone who has endeavored to find out the truth. And we're going to get into all of that right after the break. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Coast AM. Rob Simone in with this Saturday night edition. And we're going to get on Michael Sala, who is a founder of Exopolitics and someone who has been researching anomalous extraterrestrial life for many years. Dr. Michael Sala, welcome back to Coast AM.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be here.
Last time I saw you, I was at your home in the Big Island in Hawaii.
That's right. Yeah, you're visiting when we were in the Kona area, and now we've moved to another area, but we're still here on the Big Island. We love it, and certainly the surfing is great.
Yeah, I think about you sometimes. Now, this is kind of breaking news that we're going to talk about tonight, this UFO docked at the International Space Station, and this is some extraordinary footage. How did you first hear about this film?
Well, this is quite amazing footage because, as you mentioned earlier, it is actually NASA footage, and it is showing an object that appears to be docked with the International Space Station. I first heard of this just a few days ago, going through the various websites with some information about the footage that was first made available on January 29, which showed this object. And the more I researched and looked into it, it was very much an example of one of the people in the general public basically turning on a recording device, and they just basically taped a live feed from NASA's ISS feed that actually goes out live without any interruption, and they just taped that, and it showed this object for about 2 minutes, just stationary by the International Space Station.
Yeah, and we've seen these videos before over the past 10 years, and they've captured really incredible stuff, really things popping up from the atmosphere. And I thought since some of these things have hit the airwaves, that they put a delay on that feed. What do you know about that?
Well, that was certainly the case with the space shuttle. I believe that happened with one of the missions, STS-48, where there was something anomalous that was recorded, and someone was able to basically upload that, and they had that video, and it caused a lot of problems for NASA, and so they then had a time delay. Well, in this case, as the International Space Station, the video feed is live, and there's a number of cameras on the International Space Station recording what is happening there. There are internal cameras where you see the astronauts going about their daily business, and you have audio of that. And during the downtime, they switch over to the external cameras, and the external cameras are basically focused on the Earth. And you can see it in the case of this video footage, that you see the Earth slowly rotating in the background, and the external camera is showing basically the Soyuz escape module, and in the background is the Earth rotating. And the remarkable thing here is that just between the Soyuz escape module and the Russian research module that's part of the International Space Station is this yellow object that is approximately 10 meters long, looking as though it's attached to the docking apparatus there where the Soyuz craft is also docked. And the craft is stationary, or the yellow object is stationary, and even though you see the Earth Earth rotating in the background, the yellow object doesn't move at all. And so what that suggests is it's not space debris, because the International Space Station is traveling around the Earth pretty quick. It only takes about 90 minutes to do a complete rotation around the Earth. So it's traveling pretty fast. So any space debris that was captured by the external camera, it would be moving. But this object doesn't move at all.
Yeah, it goes on for about 5 minutes here. And where can people go and see this, first of all? Because it's really something that's quite visual. It's at the examiner.com website, right?
That's right, yes. You've got my article linked up there, and so if they just go to that article, the video is embedded in that article, and they can watch it as it just stays there stationary for the 2 minutes. And the interesting thing is that you see the light kind of coming back, you know, like it starts to darken, and then it lightens because the sun, because the space station is moving around really quickly, and so different angles mean that you'd have different variations of light. And so the object, you can see it go dark and light, as well as the Soyuz escape module. Mm. What that tells us is that it's not something that's attached to the screen of the camera, because some people thought, well, it's it must be some kind of blemish or something that attached to the camera lens. Well, if the object is lightening and dark, going dark, as well as the Soyuz space capsule, that means that you actually have some depth here. So this is not something that's stuck on the camera lens. It is something that is actually stationary next to the ISS itself.
Yeah, it absolutely looks like it is at that join between the escape capsule and the space station itself. Now, it is hooked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. Just click on the tonight's show page and you'll see a link there. Now, it's sort of, well, an oblong object, and there's this little round sort of hole in it. What do you make of it? Maybe you've been watching this thing more than I have. It looks like it could be hollow, but it's hard to get the depth of it.
It's it looks symmetrical. It's a kind of teardrop shape. So it looks like something that is streamlined for travel through atmospheres. And of course, the International Space Station is not all that high. I forget the exact height, 150 miles or something in that range. And so this is something that can travel through atmospheres with some kind of aerodynamic stability. And I can't quite tell exactly what the black dot is in the middle there. But certainly it's not not reflecting the light as is the rest of the object. So it's some kind of dark part where the sunlight is just being absorbed in. Mm. But it is basically joined at that right part of the International Space Station where you actually have the docking mechanism.
Yeah.
Now, of course, people will say, well, the Soyuz module or the Soyuz escape craft is docked to the International Space Station at that point. So how could something else dock there? Well, you know, that's a good question, but certainly it's significant that it appears to be docked at the very same place. And to my mind now, and this is speculation, of course, you know, if it is a spacecraft, and it belongs to a non-earthly civilization, the fact that it positioned itself between the Soyuz escape module and the rest of the ISS, I think, is very significant, because essentially this is the only way, in an emergency, the crew of the International Space Station can get out. But, of course, if this is an extraterrestrial vehicle, it's basically blocking the escape hatch or the escape path. Mm. So I thought that's quite significant. And I thought the other thing that was very significant was at the end of the it's just over 2 minutes, the actual live feed that was captured, it goes to blue screen. And that blue screen, basically, NASA says, well, that's when it loses signal. Well, that's one explanation. Another explanation might be if in a situation where something appears that's anomalous, NASA can cut the live feed. And that appears to be what happened. And I think that's also very significant, because to me that suggests that whatever this is, it was probably a surprise. NASA wasn't expecting it, and they certainly weren't expecting that it would be kind of recorded and would go out into the general public. And once they realized that this thing was actually showing up on the live feed, they cut the feed. But it took them just over 2 minutes to realize.
Right. Well, I wonder if this was some sort of craft that the people inside the space station were not expecting. Wouldn't they have proximity alarms that would go off to let them know that there was something, looks like to be over 15 feet long, was parked up right next to them?
Well, I'm not quite sure how the International Space Station is set up to deal with this kind of situation.
If it is at all.
Yeah, exactly.
And their proximity sensors might not be turned on if they have them, but this is something that looks like it's touching. I mean, it's right next to it, and I'm struggling. I've been looking at this thing for an hour, and I'm struggling to come up with an explanation. I've seen a lot of these videos over the past decade. And this is the first time we actually see a thing that has a color to it. I mean, it's an object for sure. In your mind, have you ruled out any possibility that this is perhaps some sort of apparatus for a solar panel or some kind of balloon or some kind of experiment or anything else?
Well, someone did suggest that it might have been the parachute, that a malfunctioning parachute from the Soyuz escape module. Now, the problem, though, here is that if it was a parachute or something like that, because the space station is moving around so quickly, you would see some movement, because a parachute would still, even though the space station is in outer space, it's still there would still be some movement of the fabric, and so that would kind of rule out, because it's stationary, that would rule out a misdeployed parachute.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of any other structure that NASA may have deployed there, well, you're seeing nothing else connecting it.
Yeah,
there's nothing else holding it in place. You know, the robotic arm is nowhere near it. So to my mind, it's not something that's been deployed by NASA. It's just, to my mind, something that suddenly appeared there, and then NASA cut the live feed once they realized that this thing was being taped or being televised around the world.
Yeah. Well, another thing that comes to mind is that the cameras that are set up for the space station and for the space shuttle weren't just the kind of camera that you point and take a picture of a mountain. I think these things can see into the infrared. Are in your mind, is there any possibility that we're seeing more than perhaps someone looking at a window on the space station would see, because these cameras have an ability to see more than the human eye?
Well, this is not infrared footage. I mean, this is just visual, basically normal light being captured on camera here. Certainly, the space station has had some highly sophisticated camera equipment installed on it. And the latest was when they did the spacewalk in November, December, and they installed two new high-definition cameras for recording the Earth. And of course, the infrared would be one of the light spectrums they would use for basically gathering information. But for this particular footage, it was a shot in the visual spectrum.
Yeah. Well, they pick up more light for dim situations, and I'm sure they can see more than the human eye can. But yeah, no, this is well lit. This is certainly something that you could see, I would imagine. But if this was an isolated incident, you might say, okay, well, we don't know what that is. But this is something that's been going on for years and decades. That Tether experiment. I know there was a significant UFO captured in that. And these things have been going on as long as they've been pointing cameras into space. In your mind, is this just yet another example of our world, our Earth, our upper atmosphere teeming with strange life?
Well, that's exactly right. A lot of the most convincing evidence of UFOs and extraterrestrial life does come from NASA itself. The live video feeds that show anomalous objects. You mentioned the Tether incident. There was the STS-48 incident where it appeared that a UFO was being shot at by some facility in Australia, and you see the UFO taking evasive action. And there are even whistleblowers or people who have worked at NASA that claim that they actually witnessed on one of the live feeds while they were working at NASA not only a UFO rendezvous with the space shuttle, but also an extraterrestrial emerging from the UFO and actually interacting with the astronauts. So there you and that was Clark McClelland. And that's very interesting, because that is giving us another example of what appears to be a spacecraft docking or rendezvousing with a NASA facility, and basically there being some interaction. And I think looking at this particular video we have of the yellow object docked with the ISS, I would say that that's very suggestive of some kind of interaction happening on board the ISS.
Yeah, well, no, they're definitely tangled. They are definitely commingling, that is for sure. But what about the idea that this black budget part of the military-industrial complex has unlimited resources, and it is a safe bet that there is some form of military astronaut program? Could this be one of these black sort of space vehicles that maybe ran into trouble and had to do an emergency docking?
Well, I think if it was a vehicle that belonged to the secret government space program, and if it ran into trouble or had to kind of rendezvous with the International Space Station, there would have been some advance warning or some notification that, hey, we're in trouble, we're coming in. And that communication, to my mind, would have ensured that the live camera feed from the ISS was cut. But that it wasn't cut in this case suggests to me that it was some kind of surprise visit and probably didn't belong to the secret space program. That would be my guess, just because it actually was televised.
Yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe this secret military spaceship doesn't have even the same kind of comm links or the same kind of radio that could even talk to the space station.
Well, that's a very interesting question. I know one of the things that Richard Hoagland has pointed out a few times, and as well as others, was that with all the space shuttle missions, they always went up, and there was always a kind of significant time lag before they made their rendezvous with the ISS. And the suggestion was that while in this time lag, sometimes it would take a couple of days, that it, in fact that was probably because that they were interacting with vehicles from the secret space program. Now, in that case, that would suggest that they probably do have relatively good communications. So, to my mind, this is probably not something that belongs to the secret space fleet, even though I think that there is such a program that exists, and it probably does interact a lot with ISS.
Okay, hold it right there. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this and your new book about JFK. My name is Rob Simone. You're listening to Coast AM. Thank you so much. Welcome back to the program. This is Coast to Coast AM. And once again, I'm picking the bumper music, having a ball. We're talking about the idea that NASA, with all their money and JPL, with all their research and all their cameras in space, they occasionally capture images that they didn't bargain for. And when they do, well, they try to suppress it. After all, their mission is to seek out new life, much like Star Trek, one of my favorite shows. And when they find it, I think it just freaks them out because NASA's cameras have captured all kinds of things that are worthy of investigation. And tonight, in the first hour, we're talking with Dr. Michael Sala about such an event that happened just recently. This was on the International Space Station. And their cameras, on January 29th, 2014, picked up, well, an object, a very long object that looks like it's attached to the International Space Station. You got to see it to believe it. Go to coasttocoastam.com, click on tonight's show. There's a link. It'll take you right to the YouTube video, although it might be a bit busy because everyone in the world now is looking at it. And we're going to get some final thoughts from Dr. Michael Sala about this right after the break, and also talk to him about his new book, Kennedy's Last Stand. Stay right there. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking with Dr. Michael Sala, and at the top of the hour, we come back. We'll be talking with Josh Reeves, our second guest, about the lost secrets of ancient America. And Dr. Sala, just before the break, we were talking about this incredible craft. To your knowledge, is there any official explanation from NASA, or is there anyone trying to get one?
Well, we hope that with this broadcast that it'll get NASA's attention, that they will have to basically give some statements, try and give us some explanation for what is going on, because there's too many questions that are being raised about this, just in terms of it appears to be something artificial, and it, the positioning suggests something that is actually docked with this ISS for a period of time, and that probably there may have been some kind of interaction. And so NASA really does need to reply. And I think as people look at this video and it gets out there, that people will pressure NASA to give some explanation. And of course, we'll see how the explanation holds to analysis, because this is very strong documentary physical evidence that something did happen there. And I just kind of want to basically acknowledge the person who actually put this up on the web. The user on YouTube is StreetCap1, and he's just one example of a number of people out there that monitor these live feeds from NASA, the European Space Agency, various feeds that are out there from these national space programs, and it's because the general public is vigilant and recording these that we have this kind of evidence that we can now hold up to NASA and say, well, what's going on?
Yeah. In your mind, is there a culture of silence at NASA and JPL when they do come across something or something gets out that clearly looks anomalous? Do they just sort of sweep it under the rug?
Oh, I think they do more than just slip it under the rug. I think there's a culture of deception here. And I think the Dark Mission book by Richard Hoagland kind of really does justice to describing the way in which NASA just does try to deceive. And there are so many whistleblowers who have come forward now to give their own direct testimony of what they saw NASA doing that was more than just kind of sweeping things under the rug, but actually tampering with the evidence, removing objects that appeared to be on NASA images taken by various space satellites or programs around the moon or Mars, and actually removing evidence of what appears to be artificial structures on these different celestial bodies. So, mm-hmm. So NASA definitely is in the business of covering up and actually altering evidence. I don't think it applies to all of NASA personnel, but I think those in the very senior leadership positions basically take this kind of action, and they make sure that those who are subordinate to them in NASA basically follow the line or they're out. And I think someone like Ken Johnson, who was head of NASA's Lunar Imagery Department for a period of time, who actually objected to what was going on there at NASA, that he eventually was basically forced out of the program. But he saw at first hand how NASA was actually altering images of what appeared to be some artificial structure on the surface of the moon.
Hmm. Well, one image that wasn't suppressed that is absolutely stunning is the monolith on one of the moons of Mars, Phobos. It is clearly symmetrical. It stands up, and there's nothing else around it that even comes as close to being as tall. And I even talked to Buzz Aldrin about this, and he thinks this is one of the biggest mysteries out there. What's your thoughts on this monolith on the moon of Mars?
Well, I think it's fascinating. We have the Russian footage of their Mars their Mars program. One of their ships actually was destroyed by something that appeared to be coming from Phobos. So we have that footage. Then we have Buzz Aldrin's comments that basically suggest that there is something very unusual on Phobos, and that this is an artificial structure.
Yeah. No, it just gets, you know, deeper and deeper, this rabbit hole. Every time they do anything, it seems like they come up with something that suggests that we're either not alone now or we weren't in the distant past. And with the help of everybody, I think we're going to finally break this culture of silence. Now, let's talk a little bit about your new book. It sounds pretty exciting. It's called Kennedy's Last Stand. And a lot of people associate Kennedy, JFK, with this UFO issue in the sense that maybe he knew something about it and was trying to get it out to the public.
Well, that's right, actually. In the book, I cite the evidence that JFK actually became knowledgeable about the UFO topic as early as 1942, and that in 1945, he actually traveled to Germany as a guest of the then Secretary of the Navy, James Forrestal, and witnessed the advanced Nazi technologies that were being considered under Operation Paperclip, and that Kennedy was actually a participant in the Potsdam meeting, where you actually had Truman, Stalin, and Churchill discussing the fate of Germany and the rest of the world, and how to divvy up the technologies that their respective militaries were discovering in Germany. And of course, Kennedy was there. So I think that that is something that is very suggestive, that Kennedy actually saw whatever it was the Nazis were working on, and he actually described it in one of his books. So it's not a well-known book. It's called Prelude to Leadership. It was a book that Kennedy wrote about his travel to post-war Germany, and he described him seeing these advanced Nazi technologies and how impressive they were. And so that was something that Kennedy experienced in 45. And I think that by the 1960s, when he became president, I think that through his various committee assignments in the House of Representatives and then in the Senate, that he became more knowledgeable about the UFO issue. And that when he became president, he wanted to know, well, what's been happening? And he was basically given the runaround by the CIA that then at the time, and probably even now, basically maintain a monopoly on the most classified UFO files. And Kennedy, from the beginning of his administration, in the book I basically cite various documents and various attempts Kennedy made to learn about the UFO issue and basically have the information released from the CIA. I don't think Kennedy was actually at that point committed to disclosing all of this to the public. I think what he wanted to do was to basically prize this information away from the hands of the CIA into the hands of the State Department, into NASA, into the executive branch of the presidency, so that they could make more responsible and more representative decisions as to what to do with this information. And so that was the struggle. It was a bureaucratic struggle, and I think Kennedy basically did a number of things to try to have the CIA release this information, and ultimately paid the sacrifice, or paid a very heavy price for his efforts.
Hmm. Well, you mentioned Operation Paperclip, and of course that was a very interesting part of our history, and it shouldn't be surprising to some people to think about the Nazis having this advanced technology, because they did. In fact, NASA was started by some of these ex-Nazi scientists, wasn't it?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, during the end of the Second World War, the most knowledgeable people in space rocketry were former Nazi scientists, and these were all repatriated under Operation Paperclip, those in the Allied zones of occupation. The Russians did the same thing in their areas of occupation. And so basically these people were taken to the United States, former Nazis, and they were the ones that started up the space program. Now, of course, there were a number of secret programs that the Nazis had, and that some of these became highly classified. These were not shared with the general public. So we know of NASA's reliance on people like Wernher von Braun for setting up the Apollo program and using conventional rocketry to be able to launch satellites into space and so forth. But those were the kind of unclassified programs. There were also classified programs that these former Nazis had worked on. And certainly Kennedy was exposed to some of this when he was in Germany as a guest of the Secretary of the Navy, James Forrestal, who, as the Navy's secretary, was making the decision as to which of these technologies the Nazi would invest their own resources, the Navy would invest their resources for reverse engineering.
James Forrestal has been linked to MJ-12. Indeed, he is someone that is tied directly to the leadership of it. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Forrestal is actually mentioned on a very important document that has been studied by a number of the leading UFO researchers, and has basically been found to not have any kind of falsity attached to it, or it's basically held up to scrutiny very well, and that is the Eisenhower briefing document, and that lists the founding members of MJ-12, and James Forrestal was part of that group of founding members of MJ-12. He's also mentioned by the Truman memo, which was basically a memo that President Truman issued to set up the Majestic 12 group that would take responsibility on the UFO ET issue. So Forrestal is mentioned in a number of important documents, and that he actually was involved very much in the UFO issue. Now, the important thing to keep in mind here about James Forrestal was that he was also a close friend of John F. Kennedy. And as I mentioned, he took Kennedy as a guest to post-war Germany. He actually wanted to recruit Kennedy into his personal staff, but Kennedy chose to go into politics under pressure by his father, Joseph. But nevertheless, Forrestal and Kennedy maintained a friendship. And I think one of the things that got Forrestal into trouble was that he was actually briefing congressmen about the UFO issue. So here you have Kennedy having a friendship with Forrestal, Forrestal being a member of MJ-12, and Forrestal running into problems because he's briefing these various congressmen about the UFO issue. And I think that is directly relevant to Forrestal's untimely death in 1949, where he supposedly jumped out of the 16th floor medical hospital window to his death, when in fact there was good evidence that he was actually prepared to leave and to basically continue on with his life, but someone wanted to silence Forrestal. He knew too much.
Yeah, very suspicious. Well, tell me what you think was going on in JFK's mind. I mean, he was patriotic. He was somebody who understood the importance of national security and classifying things. Why wouldn't he see the need to toe the line and to keep the secret? Why do you think he was, if he was, trying to get this out against the wishes of the people that he respected and was friends with?
Well, the important thing to keep in mind here was that John Kennedy, as well as James Forrestal, were both very successful Irish Americans. They came from a background of this kind of Irish Catholicism, where people would succeed by their own efforts, and that was very different to the kind of elite culture of that part of the world. In New England, Massachusetts, and so forth, where you had an elite establishment, where it was really who you knew, typically a kind of a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant culture, where things were done in secrecy. It was all done through connections, and basically, if you knew the right people, you would rise high and you would succeed. You would get high public office. Whereas for Kennedy and Forrestal, that was anathema to their kind of Irish Catholic upbringing, where it was really through your own efforts that you would succeed. So when Forrestal and then later Kennedy saw the way in which the UFO issue was being run, they realized that this was being run in a way that would not benefit all Americans. They realized that this was being run in a way that would basically benefit an exclusive elite established in the kind of Northeast, basically the establishment, and that this was something that Kennedy and Forrestal opposed. And so I think you had two very different political cultures there, and Kennedy really did run into great difficulty in trying to deal with that political culture from the old-time establishment that wanted to keep things secret and basically keep it in the kind of all-boys network.
Let me ask you about your best guest, because you are the best person to ask. Who is MJ-12 now? Can you give us names of the people that you think are in the inner circle of keeping the UFO ET issue silent?
Well, at this very moment, I can't give you any names. I can refer to people who historically have played significant roles with MJ-12. Whether they continue to play that role, that I'm not sure, in terms of like an official position with MJ-12. Certainly people like Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, David Rockefeller have all been people that have been very prominent in setting up MJ-12, in facilitating its activities. Whether they now are active in any leadership position, that I'm not sure, but certainly they would be kind of respected elders within that kind of MJ-12 community. So there probably has been a kind of internationalization of the functions and the roles of MJ-12 and the way in which the technologies have been kind of reverse engineered throughout the world, that things are not done exclusively in the United States anymore, but I think especially the echelon countries, and certainly they would be the ones where a lot of the reverse engineering of the programs are now taking place. And, you know, in echelon of countries, I mean places like Canada, Britain, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, of course, that these are all countries where you would probably have people in very senior positions, whether they're in the military or the intelligence community or the corporate community, because I think this is probably where more and more of the power or more and more of the secrets have gone into the corporate community, because there's no Freedom of Information Act that can actually lead to any of the corporate files being released to the general public.
Yeah. Well, we know that America is very tight-lipped about it, always has been, ever since Roswell. What country is the most vocal and you think could lead the way in getting some of this official truth out? Is there any one country that has been more sort of open about this issue?
I think so. I think Russia, the Russian Federation, is actually playing a very important role in leaking this information. There was a very famous incident in December of 2012 when the Russian Prime Minister, Dmitry Medvedev, actually stated, you know, on camera, even though it was recorded at the end of an interview, he was still being actually taped. So he says live on camera that every Russian president, when he assumes office, he has two folders given to him. One folder deals with Russia's nuclear secrets, and the other folder deals with the extraterrestrial phenomenon, that basically there's a secret agency that has been set up to monitor extraterrestrials on the planet. Now, that was really dynamite that the Russian Prime Minister actually said this on air.
Yeah.
You know, people said that he was joking, but he definitely didn't look as though he was joking. And interestingly, the person who actually asked him the question was referring to a documentary that that her network had aired earlier, and Medvedev appeared to be referring to that as
right.
a source of information.
Absolutely extraordinary. Dr. Michael Sala, thank you so much for joining us. Your website is exopolitics.org. Stay with us. After the break, Josh Reeves joins us. We're going to talk about the lost secrets of ancient America. My name is Rob Simone. This is Coast to Coast AM.